Hello and welcome to another Texans Talk podcast. I'm your host today, Anthony Wood, and with me today is a friend of the podcast, Mark Sessler of NFL Network. Mark, thank you very much for joining me. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Not too bad, thank you. Trying to keep busy in these somewhat crazy times. How are you finding the lockdown, first of all?
Yeah, it's there are a couple phases to it. Initially, I found it, you know, concerning, but also sort of intriguing, just because life was suddenly so different. But that quickly got replaced with two little kids here, with a lot of homeschooling, and you know, ultimately a sense of sort of boredom and wondering what's next. Probably just the same way so many others are feeling. But it's, you know, it's certainly stretched on longer than I thought it would have initially, and I don't really know when the end in sight arrives.
Absolutely. I suppose on the plus side, and this is something I've touched on with previous guests, if nothing else, it's given a lot of us more time with our families, which I suppose is a silver lining to it all.
Yeah, I think there's definitely moments of it where I kind of can see, you know, a simplified kind of day-to-day life, which I think is, you know, been an upside for me personally and us here at home. But there's also just a lot of family FaceTime, which I think, you know, sometimes it could be a little bit too much, but I do agree. I think it's been like something about it. There've been little pockets of positive moments inside of the whole thing. Yes,
absolutely. And it's shaping together what's going to be a very interesting NFL season, obviously, with a preseason that we don't really know what to expect from yet, and a season which is sort of up in the air at the moment. But as it stands, looking ahead, the AFC South is shaping to a pretty open division as far as I can tell. Titans obviously offer a Super Bowl run. Texans had a decent postseason last year as well. Colts have made some big moves. The Jags seem to be going into a rebuild mode. Let's go. I was wanting to go team by team and seeing what you could give us for your thoughts. So starting with the Colts, they drafted Michael Pittman, Jonathan Taylor, Julian Blackman, Jacob Eason, Danny Pinter, Robert Windsor, Isaiah Rogers, Denzon Patman, and Jordan Glasgow. And then they obviously signed the likes of Philip Rivers as well. What are your thoughts on their move so far and how that's shaping up the team?
I love their offseason. I think Jonathan Taylor was drafted. I mean, Marlon Mack still has a role there in the backfield, but I think Jonathan Taylor is going to have a huge opportunity to carve out a very meaningful role for them. And Michael Pittman Jr. too fills a need they really could have used for a while there, help alongside T.Y. Hilton. They've got a number of young wideouts, and I think Philip Rivers at this point, I don't think this is a long-term thing, obviously, and I think that they see that too. We're looking at a one-year deal at the moment. But Philip Rivers playing behind the best offensive line that he's had in a million years. I like the formula, and I think they can be very successful. They really, 2 years ago, looked like they were edging towards Super Bowl contender material when they lost Andrew Luck, and that changed everything. The way the team is run, I look at the way that the Frank Reich and his coaching staff, works in unison with the front office, and I think Chris Ballard, the GM, is a top five GM. And so I always just sort of have faith that what they do in the offseason is a very detailed, structured plan, and they followed that this year. And they're a better team, and they're certainly a contender for the division title. I wouldn't have a problem giving them maybe a little bit of an edge over the Titans, depending on what we get from Philip Rivers.
And that's what's interesting about this is obviously is Philip Rivers is coming off of what was by his standards, a pretty disappointing year. And I know a lot of people have written him off. What are you expecting from him this year? Are you expecting to see some of the old Rivers of say, 14, 15?
Well, I don't know if you need him to go do all out aerial assault operations from one Sunday to the next. I think they want to run the ball effectively. I think that their draft shows that their line is built for that. And so maybe you don't put everything on Philip Rivers, especially out of Tennessee. You know, let's just say that we get a season, but you don't get training camp in its normal format, or you don't really get any offseason work. I think a trend in general, and this is just a guess on my part, but a lot of teams would want to come out running the ball as effectively as they can to get kind of passing games need a little bit more time to get in sync. I'm just saying that there's very little time with Philip Rivers and his wideouts and, you know, a lot of new faces. Running the ball makes sense early, I like their defense too. So when it comes to Rivers, I think we'll get a more efficient situation this season. Last year was a bit disastrous. And, you know, Rivers and Frank Reich obviously have worked together in the past, really like each other and work well. And Rivers comes in knowing that offense. So, you know, Rivers has had these seasons before where the turnovers hiked up and there were issues. And he, you know, there were even to the point where he was sort of a comeback player of the year candidate because he bounced back from a bad campaign. So I don't think he's too old or has lost physical skills or anything like that. I think he's extremely durable and can still do it. And he's in a good situation. So I like him to have a better an uptick from last year.
Absolutely, and it's really exciting, even from a Texans point of view. I mean, obviously, I know that puts them in a more difficult position, but it's exciting to see what Rivers is going to do with this team, and I really hope he has somewhat of a late renaissance of his career. Do you see him as a guy who's simply there for the year as a win now situation, or do you think he's there possibly for 2, 3 years with either Brissett or Eason as the heir apparent?
Well, I don't think Brissett is necessarily the heir apparent just because they've made this move, I think, after judging that his, well, they like him. He did a lot for that organization when Luck retired. But I think they've made the decision that he's not their starting quarterback. You know, you don't bring in Rivers, you don't bench him, then bring in Rivers for multiple years and then go back to him. I just don't see that happening. With Rivers, you know, he's already agreed to become a high school football coach as soon as he retires, and so that, I don't think that decision gets made if he's thinking, you know, I want to play 3 or 4 more years. I just don't. I get the feeling a little bit around the Philip Rivers experience, and you know, he's got you know endless children, and a family is very important to him, and you know, I think he probably will move towards that part of life and this other job that he's already agreed to do, I would guess after this season. That would be my guess. But you know, if something, the season could dictate that a little bit too. If it went really poorly, I think that would hasten his departure. But if it went really well and they came really close to a Super Bowl and he felt like, you know, one more chance. I mean, I think football players are at a certain age, you're kind of looking at your career on a year-to-year basis. And you know, what happens, what unfolds could dictate that. And, you know, in the chance that there was a very shortened or a non-season, that might also keep the fire burning to come back a year from now.
And part of me can't help but root for him that little bit. Maybe a sort of a Peyton Manning-esque end to his career, win in his final season and walk out into the sunset into possibly a Hall of Fame, a sort of end to his career. I mean, you can't help but wish for him a little bit in that regard, so it's exciting for them. Moving on to the Jags, another very busy draft. They brought in CJ Henderson, Kalavon Chaisson, Laviska Shenault, Devon Hamilton, Ben Bartsch, Josiah Scott, Shaquille Quarterman, Daniel Thomas, Colin Johnson, Jake Luton, Tyler Davis, and Chris Claybrooks. A big draft class from them. Obviously, they lost the likes of Campbell, Boye, Foles, obviously Ramsey earlier on. Possibly Fournette and Ngakoue before the start of the season. It's really a question mark at this point in time. How do you think their team is shaping up? Because it's an interesting situation down there in Florida.
Well, I can't help but wonder if they are eyeing, you know, almost next year's draft in terms of what could be there at the quarterback position if they wound up with a very early pick. At the same time, I think they're very open to Gardner Minshew having a full season as their starter and maybe becoming their long-term starter. I thought Minshew was a phenomenal, interesting player last year for the situation he was put into. And I think they correctly moved on from Nick Foles, and getting out of that contract was fortuitous for them. They're of all the teams in the AFC, perhaps the most identifiably in transition. You know, there are people wondering why Doug Marrone was kept around, why anyone in the front office was. But I think that they, a lot of this stuff, you know, that front office and Dave Caldwell, the GM, he's survived through many iterations of the team. So, you know, not every team runs the same, and you know, they know sort of what his role is better than we would. But they're really clearly in another transition, and it kind of shows how quickly that playoff Super Bowl window can shut. They've moved on from so many veterans. For them, you know, I do like the draft class. They have reloaded a little bit with C.J. Henderson at quarterback and Chasen on the edge, along across from Josh Allen. I think that is a pretty good 1-2 punch on their defensive line. And so, you know, there's something to build around. I just kind of wonder how long the current people running the show will be around to complete the job. I mean, I think if they really tumble off a cliff, it could be a pretty rocky offseason next time around. But that's all looking ahead. I mean, I see them as the clear bottom team in the division, and you know, a team that will probably be picking in the top five, barring miracles from Minshew, which, you know, he's not in a great environment to top what he did in year one.
Absolutely. I must admit, though, for me, one of the pick that really stands out was Chenault at 42. I loved him coming out of him in 2018. I thought he was fantastic. Obviously, a bit of a down year in 19, but I mean, he's such a top talent. If he can stay healthy, he's going to be really versatile on that offense. I can't wait to see what he can do with Minshew. Obviously, being such a good deep passer, I think it's a really exciting offense moving forward. Do you see the likes of Fournette and Ngakoue being part of this team moving forward, or do you think they're really trying to move on from that sort of Coughlin era?
Well, I think you're stuck with, not stuck with, I think Ngakoue is stuck with the Jaguars. I think he's obviously very clear that he was disgruntled and wanted out. I don't know how you can make it any more clear, but he really, you know, a lot of these guys, I think in this particularly tricky offseason, there was a little bit less movement for some of these players that wanted out of their teams because of just the inability to travel and visit and meet with other clubs. And Ngakoue has been a really good Jaguar, I mean, on and off the field up until that tiff with management. So, you know, I would imagine him to play through the season and, you know, probably put a lot of it behind him. He's still going to make a huge amount of money. So it's not like, you know, he's getting short shrifted. Reassess his career next season and see what happens there. Fournette, to me, it just feels like an out the door character. And I think at running back, if they can find another solution there, he could be gone. It you know, the writing's been on the wall, and he you know, Fournette and Coughlin had their ups and downs too. But in general, it's hard to look at that draft pick because of what they could have had at quarterback back then at that position when they took Fournette. But he feels like part of the old Jaguars, not the new plan.
And you got to wonder as well what that Saxonville defense of a couple of years ago could have done if they'd had an offense to match. I mean, do you think that's one of the better defenses that wasn't able to meet its true potential because of the offense that hampered it?
Oh, certainly. I mean, you know, I think back to their playoff run when they, you know, nearly got to the Super Bowl, nearly beat the Patriots. That, you know, as fun as that Jaguars team was for me to watch, I found them enjoyable, but it was a bit of a circus act because it was, you were waiting for something to happen with the offense to crumble. And they really didn't. That specific playoff run gave you hope, but it also led to them, you know, extending Blake Bortles, which was, I thought, a chaotic mistake that set them back. And, you know, they were lucky to stumble upon Minshew in the sixth round because that's not where you're looking for a quarterback. So the defense, I mean, you also look at the defense last year. I mean, it completely fell apart. And, you know, there was that stretch sort of three quarters into the season where they were getting run on 180, 190, 210 yards a game. And it was just like amazing to see Minshew even kind of keep some of those Jaguars teams in contests. And I agree that they've added a few parts on offense, but, you know, there's a lot of question marks there. And so for a second year quarterback, you know, with a lot of transition questions about the coaching staff, I kind of just feel like he's in a challenging situation to rise up, but he was last year too when he did it.
If nothing else, I suppose the fans have got Minshew Mania to fall back on because, I mean, it's, let's be honest, it's so entertaining. I mean, we saw it take London by storm as well when they went over. It's so fun to see the fans getting into it and getting them in the stadium, and if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, he gives them identity, and I agree with you. I found him really enjoyable to watch at a time in the year when we needed a little bit of that. And, you know, he fully earned, in my book, the starting job, or at least the chance to, you know, go in this year and show what he can do with a full off season and season. I wouldn't call it a full off season, but they really brought in they signed Mike Glennon, which is an indication that they're not really looking to challenge Minshew at this point. They had a chance to go. People linked him with Andy Dalton because of the Gruden factor there as offensive coordinator, and that didn't happen. So if there's anything to draw on offense, is that they're openly committed to Minshew. You know, barring injury, I think he's going to start 16 games. I just don't know who else you'd give the ball to at this point.
Absolutely. And quick sidetrack here. I'm glad you mentioned Andy Dalton. Were you surprised that the likes of Jacksonville and possibly New England didn't chase him more than they did?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think Andy Dalton is a very clear ceiling. And I guess if the Jaguars, as we were saying, they seem to prefer Minshew over Andy Dalton in terms of finding out what Gardner's ceiling is. And I would make the same decision. I would not want to put Minshew on the bench for Andy Dalton on a team that probably really is not going to contend this season to begin with. As for the Patriots, I mean, that was more wish casting of everyone wanting to project Cam Newton into New England or Andy Dalton into New England, where the Patriots never said a word about it. And they seem content for now to roll with Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer. I mean, I think they're candidates to bring in another quarterback too, if the right person becomes available. I just don't, you don't get the sense that Cam Newton is the guy. I mean, but also Cam Newton's stuck in a terrible situation where teams can't visit with him. And, he's coming attached with injury questions. I would not be surprised if this season progresses, in normal fashion, that Cam Newton will have a job early on when someone gets injured, play very well, and remind everyone of how, little he was regarded this offseason. I am surprised he's not signed by someone, but we're also in a league that's so vastly different than 5 or 6 years ago, where, there aren't seven or eight teams with absolutely junk at quarterback. I mean, almost every team either has a proven veteran, someone they truly believe in, or a young quarterback that they've invested a lot in. So there isn't really a space for Cam Newton right now.
Absolutely, and we are really deep at QB right now in comparison to a couple of years ago, as you mentioned. I mean, obviously going back to the Texans, AJ McCarron backup now, he's a very solid backup. He's proven he's a we can win in the NFL, and it's pretty much the same league wide. I mean, last year obviously over in Tennessee you had Mariota's backup at that point. Obviously he's on his way out now, but do you see similarities between Newton's situation and possibly Tannehill's situation last year?
Well, I do. I think a healthy Cam Newton can be a mega difference maker. And there are, it really will probably take at this point. And, I'm looking up and down the list at all the quarterbacks here, and there were situations this offseason that could have potentially shifted, like, the Raiders and Derek Carr. They were a candidate, I thought, to maybe draft someone if they fell in love with someone. They signed Mariota, but that's a low level. It's kind of like when Tannehill went to Tennessee. It's sort of like someone whose stock is down, and maybe Mariota could come in and change minds, but they're pretty committed to Derek Carr right now. And you look like at Denver, maybe Denver would be a candidate for John Elway to fall for a Cam Newton type signing, but they're pretty married to Drew Lock at this point. And so, where everyone sits, it just seems like the patience hasn't run out with quarterback X who's in place. Now, I look at the one team that really could use a veteran backup. Russell Wilson in Seattle has nothing but Anthony Gordon, an undrafted signal caller behind him. So, I've always sort of looked at that this offseason. Like, what is their full plan there? If something happened to Russell Wilson, is Anthony Gordon the answer? Or, will they bring a lot of these teams will sign veterans. When camps are active and players are being assessed and cut, there's more of a veteran dumping ground than. You can deal with maybe in March. And so there's going to be other guys out there. I mean, all these teams right now have four or five quarterbacks, they've got to each cut two.
Absolutely, and then moving back to the AFC South, obviously a team we mentioned just now, the Titans. Obviously they've lost the aforementioned Marcus Mariota. They've also lost the likes of Logan Ryan, Jarrell Casey. They drafted Isaiah Wilson, Christian Fulton, Darrionte Evans, Laurell Murchison, Cole McDonald, and Chris Jackson. I love the Cole McDonald pick, I must admit. I think he could prove to be a really good value up over there at seventh. What are your thoughts on their draft and their offseason so far?
Well, I think the key for them, the draft is one part of it, but they didn't create extra needs in the draft because they found a way to keep Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill. And I think it's really, let's see if what happened last year, the magic that unfurled in the playoffs, and really the way that the Tennessee Titans moved away from the old, this is a team that can't get out of 8-8 world, into a bowl, a dangerous like army that basically like I can't the game against Baltimore, what they did when they rolled in and just knocked out the Ravens the way they did. I really can't remember too many playoff games like that. And just watching that in and somewhat on, I would imagine if you're them, they've played along with this, is let's go see how much farther we can go with that same group. You know, they lost Jack Conklin at tackle. The line, which was an incredible strength, is still a strength, but they need to think about make sure that that stays together. They've got a number of young weapons, and the defense could use more pass rushing help, but I think in general that this is a good team and they're really well coached. And I would not be surprised to see the Titans, you know, alive for the division title with a week to go. I think that, you know, you mentioned it, this, the South is so stocked right now. I think three teams are viable winners. And so it really will come down to probably health of the teams and you know, how things change and how Tannehill, in terms of stats, can he stay in that same zone he was last year? He performed to a degree that was pretty much an outlier season for him. And I think the question mark, is there a drop off there? But I really think Tannehill fit in well with the Titans and showed like extreme toughness in the playoffs too. So I don't see a drop off. I just see, you know, the division getting better around them.
Absolutely. And also bringing in Jonathan Joseph as well, obviously former Texan, a good backup there, good shoulder to lean on for Christian Fulton as well. I'm quite excited to see develop into the hopefully Logan Ryan role there. I'm glad you mentioned Tannehill there in terms of it was very much an outlying season for him. I can't help but wonder, they obviously signed him to a relatively short-term new deal, so perhaps they've got the same mentality of, well, how far can we really go with him? So I'm really looking forward to seeing if indeed he can continue that form, if it was a very much a chip on the shoulder sort of season trying to prove himself. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what Mike Vrabel does there. And then moving back to the Texans, obviously they've lost the likes of DJ Reader, Jonathan Joseph, obviously DeAndre Hopkins as well, who I know a lot of people are still furious about. Brought in the likes of David Johnson, Brandon Cooks, Randall Cobb, Timmy Jernigan and so on. And then they drafted Ross Blacklock, Jonathan Grenard, Charlie Heck, John Reed and Isaiah Coulter. What are your thoughts on their offseason moves so far?
Well, I mean, with the Hopkins trade, for me, it's like, what are you telling Deshaun Watson? You know, this was the most electric pairing in the division, arguably in the league, and you've lost your most talented player and got very little back for him. And my problem is that while I love the idea of David Johnson from, you know, pre-injury days when he was, you know, appearing to be the next big gigantic luminary in the backfield for the Cardinals, it's a long time ago. And, you know, he was essentially benched last year. I don't think he looked particularly bad when he played. It's just that they liked Kenyon Drake better. And they really were looking for a way to not pay David Johnson $10 million this season, a player that might arguably not have made the roster to begin with. And in stroll the Texans to kind of give them the best case scenario along with taking away Houston's best player outside of Deshaun Watson. So I think it put, you know, a lot of things are perception in the NFL, and Bill O'Brien, I think I really like him as a game day coach, and he's done a lot with a little in the past. And so that part of Bill O'Brien doesn't need to be proven to me. I think he can probably have this team overachieving and, you know, similar 9-7, 10-6 type record if things break right. At the same time, I mean, I think that when we've talked about this before, just sort of the power structure there, I think leaves other GMs around the league kind of shaking their head, wondering what's going on, because the moves, you know, you've stripped away so many draft picks and, you know, paid a lot for certain players. Laremy Tunsil, the trade was very expensive. It was a need, but was it the only way to get a left tackle? You know, I don't want to kill the Texans either, because teams can go and zig, and other teams are zagging and do things their own way. You know, they did get Cooks. It's not like there's nothing happening on offense. I think they have an interesting offense if David Johnson morphs into what he was before. If that were the case, they've got a good player there. You know, their offensive line outside of Tunsil is still pretty suspect. It seems like that's always the case, but they continue to add. And I think Larry Warford is someone that's on their radar now that he's been cut by the Saints. That would help a lot. I think he played well last year. It was more of a cost situation for why he was cut in New Orleans. You know, when it comes to the rest of the Texans roster, it's like, I feel like year to year they have glaring weaknesses. They've always been a little top heavy with some glaring weaknesses too. But again, the area that I do trust Bill O'Brien is to kind of just round them into shape, and Deshaun Watson can make anything possible. And, you know, We'll find out right away. I mean, I don't know if they can hang with the Chiefs, but that opener will be interesting.
It will be, and we've heard from the likes of Justin Reid recently, who said that they've got a big chip on their shoulder moving into this, especially that Chiefs game. So they're keen to hit the ground running. I must say, personally, I'm really excited to see this offense. Whilst I don't agree with the Hopkins trade in principle, I think it was a poor deal from Houston's point of view. I think everyone can see that. It's exciting to see what they can do with Stills, Cobb, QT, Fuller, Carter, possibly Coulter as well, and then, you know, Darren Fells, 7 touchdowns last season, and then you look at Duke Johnson, David Johnson, the most expensive backfield in the NFL, which I think says a lot about Texans'
right.
cap situation right now. But it's interesting, and hopefully they can get what they got out of Hyde last year from Johnson. I mean, he had a career year all of a sudden out of the blue. I mean, so I'm hoping that O'Brien is able to draw the same form we've seen in the past in glimpses from Johnson back to the forefront this year. I think it's going to be really interesting, especially if they do bring in Larry Wolford, who you mentioned. I know the Texans were linked with him within a couple of hours after he was released. There were reports by John McClain coming out that the Texans were interested in him. So if they were to bring him in, the line would be looking, you'd be looking at Tunsil, Sharping, Nick Martin, and then Wolford, presumably a right guard, and Titus Howard. Do you think that is improvement enough, especially compared to the last few years, to where this team can really compete again?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're showing that you're investing assets. If they got Warford, it would help a lot. I think the right side of the line just needs a little bit of help, but it was such a glaring disaster a couple of years ago. I mean, there's no doubt they've improved it. And the Laramie Tunsil trade was extremely expensive. They also went out and got a great left tackle, which, you know, that without that, you're in a lot of trouble. And I don't count the Texans out at all. I mean, I don't think that they've taken a major step back. For me, a little bit over and over, it seems to be Bill O'Brien and person X can't get along and person X is gone.
Yep.
And where DeAndre Hopkins been run out of the building on a different team? We don't know all the backstory. And I think that sometimes, you know, these things happen and good players have to go. For the team and the organization to function. I don't know what the rest of the roster would feel about that, though. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins probably, you know, clearly clashed with Bill O'Brien a little bit. We know that. Divorce seemed inevitable. But again, it's like, is it because Bill O'Brien must win every power struggle he engages in, or is it something different? And that's a narrative. It's just that we've seen, you know, you look in the front office, it's like one person after the next flushed out of the building. So, you know, while at the same time, like, the ownership must look at Bill O'Brien as something special because he survived each of these tiffs and he is a good game day coach. So it's not a team you count out. I mean, there's a lot of transition there. There's a lot of pressure, I think, on Bill O'Brien out of the gate to show that the offense and the additions that you mentioned are functional and better than functional.
Absolutely. And speaking of additions, obviously, like you mentioned, the Texans still have quite a few holes to plug, whether it's at right guard, possibly at safety as well. There's a lot of question marks around who's going to be lining up alongside Reed. Do you possibly see them bringing in the likes of Eric Reed or possibly someone else in what is still a relatively strong free agent group?
Yeah, I think that we could see, you know, teams with certain needs. Like, if we get to a point where either A, you've got to make a decision because time is running out, and this veteran is still sitting out there, or the player needs to figure out where he's going to be living for the year. I mean, we're just stuck in this sort of time warp right now where this inactivity is entirely COVID-19 based. Someone like Jadeveon Clowney maybe is just not getting the money he wants, but really you can't make these visits. You can visit over Zoom and things like that, but you want to give physicals. You want to know exactly where players are health-wise. But if this kind of clears up at some point, you're going to see a rash of veteran signings, and the Texans are always active. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them, you know, address the safety position, address parts of their defense, and not at all.
Absolutely. And then, and speaking of new deals, obviously Texans have been looking to sign Deshaun Watson for some time now. There have been reports circling for a couple of days now that the Texans are possibly the next team to extend their quarterback before the likes of Kansas City and Dallas. Do you see that happening, or do you think the Texans will wait for Dak Prescott, for example, to sign his deal first? And what do you suspect his deal might be around?
Well, any deal that Deshaun Watson signs now, I would expect it to be the most lucrative quarterback contract around, just because he's that kind of player that you pay and no one has any questions about. Whereas it seems that, the Cowboys have been slow to the roll on Dak Prescott. I don't know if waiting, I guess the argument would be, if you want to wait for Patrick Mahomes to get paid, then you know that you're going to make more than if you signed right now, just because the comp would, with each of these quarterback signings that everyone goes nuts over, it's like the position has probably been underpaid in general for what a franchise quarterback does for your city, for your team, for everything, sales. It's like there is no more important position. So Deshaun Watson fits the bill in every way. I don't know how you pay him any less than anyone is making at the moment.
Absolutely, and then obviously I know we need to wrap it up here. Assuming the Texans do sign him down, obviously, and assuming that the preseason does kick off as roughly expected at this point in time, the Texans have a pretty tough schedule coming up. Obviously, they've got the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Steelers through week three. Do you see the Texans being able to emulate that 10-6 record, or do you think they may have a drop off this year looking at the schedule?
Well, I think it's hard to look at any schedule in May and get a real read for it. I mean, that's a pretty rough draw. But sometimes, you want to get any of the better teams early on before they kind of figure out some of the adjustments they need to make. I mean, that said, the Ravens came out absolutely on fire in a couple early games last year, but they got nipped themselves. I mean, they ran into the Chiefs. So if I'm the Texans, I think you just have to. Bill O'Brien's pretty good at just understanding that the season is so extremely long, and they've had a couple seasons where they streaked, like a couple years ago when they got very hot down the stretch. And there's new faces there, so it might take a little bit of time. I mean, he came out of the Patriots system to some degree, where they don't really treat the first 4 weeks of the season the same way that others do. That you really kind of figure out who you are during that first month and round into shape. But you look at the Steelers; they'll have Big Ben back for the first time in a year. I wouldn't expect the Ravens or Chiefs to miss a beat. I mean, the Chiefs are bringing 20 of 22 players back in terms of their starters. So that's a tough, I mean, that's, it's almost like get it out of the way and then we'll start our season and see where we are in week three or four, That's a tough draw.
Absolutely. And just to close out, you mentioned obviously that the Chiefs have retained most of their starting lineup. Texans very much the opposite. Do you think there's any chance that with the Texans rejuvenating their offense to an extent and changing their system so much, that there's any chance this could actually play into their favor, that they'll be somewhat unpredictable?
Yeah, I guess it can. I mean, my thing is that whenever you get a weird off season like this, I would immediately look towards teams like the Chiefs, where your quarterback is in place, the system is in place, all the same players are there, and you've got Andy Reid running the show, who's been through a million of these off seasons and weird situations before and lockouts. So I would give the Chiefs a pretty heavy favorite, in terms of what they're bringing to the field, but also just sort of the psychological angle of negotiating this off season. I mean, the Texans have their coach and quarterback in place too. So I don't know. It's not a coin flip, because the Chiefs to me are the clear class of the AFC with the Ravens behind them. And then, the Texans are somewhere else down there. Playoff team, but they're not one, two, or three.
Absolutely. It's going to be an absolutely intriguing start to the season. Mark, thank you so much for joining us and taking the time. We really appreciate having you on the show. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
It's just that at Mark Sessler on Twitter, MarkSessler. And we have our podcast 2 times a week, and we have an NFL Network show on Fridays. And you can find out more about our podcast at the Around the NFL handle on Twitter.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at ARWoodNFL. And of course, keep up to date with everything Texans at the Texans Wire of USA Today. And of course, one little final note for you. JJ Watt's new show, Ultimate Tag, will be starting up later this month. Who doesn't want to see more of JJ Watt this time of year to cheer you up? So make sure to tune in. Thanks very much for listening. And of course, go Texans.